Hawks Reel 4. First thing, while you were at Whitby, the regiment changed. It became
an armoured regiment as opposed to a reconnaissance regiment. And you joined the 29th Armoured Brigade of the 11th Armoured Division. And you got the Matilda and Valentine tanks as well. Now, you were the duty driver, but you... This is when you converted and became a tank driver, now, or was that just done automatically?
No, I was more or less transferred to a troop.
Now, which troop were you sent to?
Four troop.
Four troop of B squadron. And you were posted as a tank driver.
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that? Because you'd enjoyed being a duty driver.
There's something about driving a tank that you feel as if you've got a powerful vehicle under you, and on these schemes you were driving over rough ground, and it was like on the Big Dipper sometimes, you know. Enjoyed it.
Now you were in four troop, and they were equipped with Valentines. I think you said is that you didn't get the Matilda, you got the Valentine.
The Matildas, I think there was two per squadron. They were at HQ. Squadron HQ had two Valentines, I think. Now, I may be wrong, but whether it was one or two, I don't know. But they had the Matilda.
Now, could you give us a description of the Valentine, as if we'd never seen one? In fact, I haven't seen one. what they were like, both as a tank, with armour, the gun and the engine and the rest of it, and also what they were like to drive, because that's what you really did, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, they were good to drive. I mean, you were on your own. You didn't have a co-driver. You were sitting in the middle of the tank. And your view was fairly restricted, as it always is in a tank. But I think you had, although they said that they weren't reliable, the ones I had an AEC diesel engine, and I found them. To the extent of my technical knowledge, okay, fine.
Now, what controls did you have in a Valentine? What was you had no co-driver. How did you drive it? What did you have to? There's no steering wheel. I mean, you know.
No, you just had your two levers in between your legs, and your gear lever here, and your accelerator, and the usual sort of thing. I didn't find any difficulty with them, and I was at. Some people said that they were difficult to drive, difficult to handle, not very good at steering, but of course you only had experience on rough ground over the moors. You didn't, except when you probably came back off schemes and you drove through the town, and then it was straightforward because you weren't needing to use any driving skills, all these things.
Now, what did you think of the armour and the gun that they? I mean, as a fighting weapon, as opposed to something to drive around in.
Well, useless as a as a modern weapon against the stuff that the Germans had. They were useless.
Why? What was wrong with them?
Too small. Too not powerful enough. 2 pounders.
The gun was only.
Only a 2 pounder, and they had beezers. British.
The machine gun.
And I think they were all right, but I think they were inclined to jam up and heat up a bit. They weren't quite as good as the Browning, but some people thought they were better. I don't. I'm not sure. I'm not up on guns at all. But.
And what about the armour? Were you happy with the amount of armour you had?
No, they had a fairly reasonable turret, but the Sherman was heavier in armour, and yet the 88mm shell would go in one side and out the other.
Were you aware then that the Valentine wasn't up to what the Germans had? Because the Germans had a lot of stuff by then. I mean, did you know then, or was it just in retrospect?
No, I don't think we really got to know statistics like that until we went over what you come up against and relative armour, relative guns and things. You never really got to know much about that. There wasn't a lot said about the inefficiency or anything of the armour material.
So at the time, were you reasonably happy with it? That's what I'm trying to say. Do you see what I mean? Or did you just not very happy, you know?
Well, I was happy that we were on these schemes in the out, and when the weather was good, it was a great profession.
Now, what sort of thing would you do on these schemes on the moors?
Well, most of the time, the driver took his orders from the turret. And probably most of the time you didn't get to know what was going on round about you, and I don't think any driver really knew what the purpose of the scheme was.
What could you see? Could you sit like in a Sherman up above the hatch in a Valentine?
Not in the Valentine. You went in a side. I don't suppose there's a Valentine picture available, but you went in at each side. You could go in from either side, but there was no hatch or anything like that.
So you just had a periscope and a slit?
A periscope. But you had a square observation that you could open with a door-like thing that you could shut. So you didn't have a very good field of vision.
And what sort of thing would you be? I mean, obviously you wouldn't know why you were doing it. What sort of thing were you doing driving about on the moors? Would you practice taking up hold down things like that? Hold down,
yes, that was one of the many things you did. You practice finding the most appropriate position to be in, a position to fire at the enemy and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And you went on schemes where you were umpired, you know. And sometimes if you were doing something wrong or considered to be vulnerable, you would be declared out. And when that happened, usually, you had the rest of the time to yourself. So everybody was hoping that an umpire would come along and say, right, you're dead. That's the sort of things that went on these exercises.
And would you learn anything? You were just a driver. Would you learn any of the other roles of the crew at the time? Because later on, I know that...
You were supposed to be versatile, yes. We got instruction in the operation of the 19th set, but I was never long enough nor interested enough in the Morse code to be... The thing was, very seldom in action, very seldom used the Morse code. It was all, voice instructions.
Did they have the sets in the Valentines, the 19 set, like they had in the Sherman?
To tell you the truth, I don't know what wireless set. That probably was the 19, because it was the one set that the British Army used all over, because it was very dependable.
And would they have the intercom?
Yeah.
Internal tank, so that the crew...
You had a box with a switch which had three positions on it. Off, A set and intercom. B set, with A and B. B set was internal. The result was that often you would hear things that somebody thought they were on B set, and sometimes quite significant things.
Such as, do you remember anything? Or?
Well, I could remember the time much later when we were being harassed with German armour somewhere, and the sunry or the commander's tank. The adjutant or somebody kept calling up and asking for lime juice, which was a code name for the typhoons, wanting to have a stonk on these tigers that were annoying us. But they came across, four of them came across and fired their rockets on this thing, And everybody thought, well, that's it, we're safe now, we'll just relax. And then 5 minutes later, another tank blew up, and then the voice came on again, can we have lime juice? And this voice came up, a real fine voice, and he said something like, yeah, really, he thinks he's in the officer's mess. These are the sort of things that happen. You know, somebody would be careless and say something, you know. Usually it was a swear word, you know.
And anything else about your time at Whitby? I mean, one thing that's been mentioned in Sellers is that everyone was supposed to have done psychiatrical tests, but nobody can remember them. Oh, you remember them.
Yeah, what
was it all about?
Well, I don't know, but there was a rumour went around that he did a one of these tests on Major Gilmore at the time, and declared him only fit for the Pioneer Corps. He made a mess of something. I think he treats it all as a bit of a laugh. Anyway, there was an awful lot of people were declared unfit to be in a tank because of this. And it was mainly because they thought it was ridiculous.
Do you remember anything about doing your own ones? Did you?
I was quite good at it because I had
What sort of thing was it?
It was sort of comparing to four different things, and one was the odd one out, and you had to find out what was the odd one. Things, simple things like that. Shapes. Sort of thing that you'd see babies doing now, you know. Thing. Which particular part of the thing does this fit in? And, you know, very simple tests.
And a lot of people didn't take them seriously.
Well, a lot of people with no sort of artistic side to them wouldn't know. And I did a bit of architecture at the art school, and I picked up things there as well. So I think I should have been in the colonel's job, and the colonel should have been in mine.
Now, you've got another new colonel there. This was a Colonel Cooper.
Yeah.
I wondered what you thought of him.
Yeah, well, he was a racing driver. So, and he was always tearing about in a Humber staff car, and I knew his driver, Jimmy Byers from Forfa, and he was a harum scarum. So the pair of them were always getting picked up by the MPs for speeding. This was in Chippenham, I think. Yeah.
It's a bit later, but carry on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was he like, Cooper? Was he a good colonel?
I hardly ever met him, really. He wasn't long enough with us. Don't know where he went, but hardly ever saw him.
So he didn't make much of an impression on you, as far as you were concerned.
No.
Do you remember going down to the Pembroke firing range? I think that might be Linney Head, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was good. I quite enjoyed that. We all had to fire both the Browning and the big gun. And that was the first time I fired a 17-pounder, and it was on a fixed turret. It was just a demonstration sort of thing. And I thought, this is the weapon that we should be having, because it was, you know, a real bomb, you know. You felt it was, and it disintegrated the target. So I thought that was good. Well,
In comparison to, is this Valentine a 6-pounder or was,
No, well, I think we had Crusaders for that time, didn't we?
I think that was a bit later they got the Crusaders, but it doesn't make much difference.
They hadn't actually converted a Sherman into a Firefly at that time. And this gun that they had set up in Kirkcudbright.
I think that's mixing up. It doesn't matter too much, right? So the next thing then would be the move down south to around Brighton Hove Way. They seem to have spent Hove, Stanmer Park, then Bynum. What do you remember of that?
I think, was that when Percy was the scheme? Was it Percy?
Percy was on the Yorkshire Moors, it says here, but there was a big scheme called Tiger round Hove.
That's it, Tiger, yeah. Tiger. Well, that was an umpire scheme. And I think we reached a village in Somerset, I think it was, and we got declared knocked out. So we spent the rest of the time drinking cider in this pub.
Well, that ration was a hard rations. That exercise was hard rations.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
Could you explain what it was like? Cause
hard rations. Well, somehow or another, I quite like hard biscuits and bully beef. So corned beef and biscuits wasn't a thing that I didn't enjoy. But, of course, you couldn't exist too long on them. You had to get a hot meal sometime. You couldn't. So I think they just tried us out two or three times with it when we were on these schemes.
Now, another thing, in that period, while they're down south, they got the Crusader and the Covenanter tanks.
Yes,
now, what did you think of the Crusader and the Covenanter? Which did you have, firstly? Because the Covenanter is the training version, isn't it?
We went out on driver. We got new drafts, and they had to be trained to drive. If you happen to be lucky to be the driver in charge of a Covenanter or a Crusader that went out on driving instruction, it was a plum job, as it were. We went out on these plantations, I think they were, and there's one or two incidents there. I was involved in an accident. I was in the turret, and a sergeant that was with this crowd, four or five learning drivers, he wanted to drive the tank back. He was kind of bored, and he wanted to drive the tank back to the camp. And while he was driving, it was gloaming, and there was a light, a red light away ahead. And the red light was only one side of a tank, and the other side was dark. So Pony, we called him. Polly. His name was Perkins, Sergeant Perkins, so we called him Polly Perkins. And he was driving along, and suddenly I bashed my face against the turret. I was in the turret. You weren't supposed to go anywhere without somebody in the turret. I was in the turret, and by rights, he shouldn't have been there. I was the driver, and that should have been there. But we hit this tank and knocked its bogey off. They had lost a trap, and they were sitting at the side of the road with one light on, and they were waiting on recovery. And there was nobody there to shine a torch or anything to stop us. We just went in, and there was a lot of damage. And Sergeant Polly Perkins was on the charge, and I was supposed to be the witness, and I remember going in to the squadron. No, I was a regimental charge, and I went to the CO, and the RSM was behind me. You know, you have no idea what these sort of occasions were like, and he whipped my berry off, which was wrong. I was a witness, and I shouldn't have taken my berry off, and he whipped my berry off. I discovered I wasn't the witness, I was being charged as well. So I got a fortnight's detention, a fortnight CB, and my leave stopped. So I thought, oh, this is very unfair. So I went to Joe Grimmin. You've heard about Joe Grimmin. He was a lawyer, as it were. I went to the officer's mess and asked to see Joe Grimmin. And he kicked up a merry stink about this, and the RSM got told off, and everybody, and I got my leave started, and so I got a great fondness for the late Joe Grimmin. He was great.
What was he like,
Joe Grimmin?
Yeah, because we've not mentioned him before. He was a Liberal leader, wasn't he, in the 60s? Or
he was his Batman said he was the slovenliest officer he's ever worked with. Invariably, you know how your berry is pulled down at the side? Well, Jules was like a big dumpling, you know. He never pulled it down, he just stuck it on. And he was slovenly, and but he was such a nice man. He was a great man.
He said he was like your lawyer. Was he known to be sympathetic to take...
He was a lawyer even before he went into the army, so...
But he'd help men who...
anybody that was in trouble or thought they were being unfairly dealt with, they went to Joe Grimm.
Was he in your squadron? Was he in B squadron? Or
I think he was second in command or something, or something. He was not a squadron officer.
So he was headquarters, so...
Yeah.
Right, now, what about the... we haven't actually talked about the Crusader or the Covenanter. Which did you normally drive, or did you drive both?
Crusader mostly, but the Covenanter.
Could you give us a sort of rundown of what you thought of the Crusader then?
The Crusader I thought was great because it was twice as fast as the Valentine and more manoeuvrable, lighter as it were. I mean, it wasn't a heavily armoured vehicle, didn't have any better than armour, the gun was so small, 2 pounder, I think. I think it was a very good vehicle, but again, it was well below the standard that you could come up against the German army.
What was it like to drive? That was your main
Excellent.
Job.
It was a good driver.
What made it so good? I mean,
the lightness, the ability to steer so easily, and the speed. You put your foot down, you got a response, whereas the Valentine, it sort of struggled in the top gear.
What about the Covenanter? Was that very different from the Crusader?
I didn't think it was as good as the Crusader. The Crusader was later than the Covenanter. I think the Covenanter came before the Crusader. It wasn't quite so versatile, for want of a better word. It didn't seem to have the speed or the ability. I may be wrong, but I only drove the Covenanter once or twice, and it wasn't my vehicle.
Now you were getting a lot more English drafts coming in this period. I mean,
yeah.
How did you feel you were being swamped at all? Or, I mean, because you'd had the first draft when you know, but right. But by now drafts were coming in all the time, English drafts. I mean, did it bother you at all?
No, I think you were quite pleased that the regiment was being kept up to strength, and we're getting good fellows, good chaps. Got to know them quite quickly, and they weren't so withdrawn as the Scots people were. They were a little bit open.
There's
a lot of fun. They were more fun-loving than we were.
There's lots of joking about porridge. And
all these sort of things. They used to get called haggis, some people. You know, they were referred to. It took a lot. It was good banter, you know, we enjoyed it.
So it was a good spirit in the regiment.
It always was a good spirit.
They went to Farnham All Saints, Bury St Edmunds, and they were there for a couple of months, and then they went to Chippenham near Newmarket, and they were there.
While we were at Bury St Edmunds, we got a couple of flaps. We had spent a lot of time putting our equipment in order to go overseas, and we got more or less orders to go to land in somewhere in North Africa to help the 8th Army, but they didn't need help at that time. And we got two lots of embarkation leave, which meant that they'd made up their mind to send us and then withdrawn it and then made it up again, and we got another. I think we got two lots of embarkation leave. One was a week and one was a 48-hour. But it wasn't a...
How did you feel about that? I mean, did you want... I mean, in the books it says that everybody was dying to go off to North Africa. How did you really feel? I'm not saying you didn't, but how did you feel about the prospect of going overseas? And then how did you feel when it was cancelled? Do you see what I mean?
You did feel unwanted, you might say. They always sort of said that... keeping the fight and forth to blow up the tanks and drive into Berlin when the war finished. That's what they thought. These are the sort of thoughts that went through your mind. Why was it 4 years after we mobilized, we never got into any
Did you want to? I mean, did you look forward to action?
Yeah. No, I was quite happy. I've been quite happy driving around Yorkshire Hoos for the whole of the war. I'm not one of these types that, you know, busted to win a BC or anything like that. But I wouldn't have objected or done anything stupid.
So when you went on your embarkation leave, you'd sort of settled for that. And then how did you feel when it was cancelled?
I think we all did.
So although you didn't particularly want to go, it was sort of irritating being set up for it. You were sort of looking at Bury St Edmunds and then Chippenham together, Newmarket. What about, you were in hutted camps there, what was it like in the huts?
Well, I personally thought they were quite good to live in. The shape of them was, and they were easy enough heated. Once you got that little round stove going, they were easy enough heated. And by that stage, we were all accustomed to hard beds, we could just put slept on floor and sort of thing. And it was. They were quite comfortable, I thought, this
and
I thought they were a good invention.
They seem to have started a lot of recreational programmes up to stop the men getting bored. The officers apparently made a deliberate effort to sort of set things going. Do you remember any of that?
Yes, I remember. Football games and cross-country running.
Did you take part in football? Was that...
Not football, no. I did a lot of cross-country running. I mean, hockey, I'd played hockey before the war, but there was none of that sort of thing. That was classed as a Trinian sort of game, you know.
What was the cross-country running like?
It was very good, because, I mean, I was...
Was it competitive?
Yeah, but to a certain extent, it was. But I quite enjoyed it. Fresh air. It was better than being cooped up in this nuts or even in a tank.
They also organised sort of other recreations. Do you remember any of that? Sort of shows and concert parties and things?
No, we got visits of Ensa and I think we did most of our own entertaining. We went, and of course we went into Bury St Edmunds and vocalised the pubs.
Did you drink much?
I was teetotal up to Whitby, and on New Year, on Hogmanay New Year, I was sitting in the billets on my own, and I thought to myself, this is no good. So I thought, I went down to the White Duck, which we call the Mucky Duck, the White Swan, I think it was called. And I stood outside the door and listened to them rendering the White Cliffs of Dover or something. And I thought, I will just go in and see what's doing. So I went in there and there was a corporal there. I can't remember his name for me. Anyway, he didn't force me. He gave me a half pint of beer, and that was the start. I think I lost my ability to be teetotal from then on.
Did you drink much? Or?
No. I never did drink much. And I didn't smoke much. In fact, anybody ran out of fags, they always came to me because I was my issue or whatever it was.
Had you smoked before you went to the army?
No. I didn't smoke and I didn't drink. It was a proper.
What made you start smoking?
I think... Mostly when you'd been out, for instance, doing a route march and you came in exhausted, the first thing you thought about was a cigarette, because it's somehow or another that relaxed you. And that's mainly how much smoking I did was a really